Greetings, film freaks. We are the Popcorn Kernels. Join us as we discuss the hard and often indigestible truths that are at the center of the fluffy and delicious world of cinema.
What's popping, people? Welcome to the Popcorn Kernels podcast. My name is Adam, and joining me in the ear holes is Harry. Say hello, Harry.
You ever had a rive eater?
On today's episode, we will be talking about Cool Runnings. This is a 1993 film directed by John Turteltaub and stars John Candy, Leon, and Doug E. Doug. IMDb describes the synopsis as follows. When a Jamaican sprinter is disqualified from the Olympic Games, he enlists the help of a dishonoured coach to start the first Jamaican bobsled team. Here is an original song to support the synopsis.
I'm gonna go to Canada to race for gold in the snow. Cause that's cool, that's cool, that's cool, cool running. That's cool, that's cool, that's cool, cool running. It's gonna get cold.
Let's start with some facts about the film. Disney envisioned the original cast with Denzel Washington as Doris, Eddie Murphy as Sanka, Wesley Snipes as Yul, Marlon Wayans as Junior, and John Candy as Irving Blitzer.
One out of five.
Who?
John Candy. They got him.
Oh, obviously, yeah. Would you have liked to have seen any of the other ones in there?
No.
No?
No.
Denzel's a class act. Eddie Murphy's hilarious. Wesley Snipes would be good as Yul, who's like the tough guy in the film. I could see it.
It's ridiculous because Denzel's never done a comedy. He never would do this. Eddie Murphy would.
I think Wesley Snipes has done a comedy, hasn't he?
I'm saying Denzel.
The second one?
No, I'm saying Denzel, though.
Oh, Denzel.
Yeah, Eddie Murphy's done comedy. I could easily see him in this.
Denzel, if Doris in the film is sort of the straight-laced character, so I could see Denzel as sort of the headstrong, straight guy in this film.
Mm.
I'd argue that I think the film would hold up 30 years after its release if it had that talent in front of the camera.
No, it would be his shame.
Do you think so?
Yeah, because a film like this doesn't need the big superstars, because it's those nice little culty comedies that are just like hidden in the 90s. You got Denzel in this. Yeah, I mean, he's done some pretty crap films, some in the past, but I wouldn't have liked to have a big superstar or Oscar winner in this. Oh god,
no. But quality's timeless, right? I'd argue that it would make the film last with
dude. You could have got Scorsese to direct this, and you still would have disliked it. You still would have been like, it's cheese fest.
Yeah. Well, it is a bit cheesy.
Exactly. So why taint people who you consider excellent by...
Yeah, I guess there's a element of not wanting to taint it further with prestige being involved in it, right? It's got that place in history as a well-loved film.
Yeah.
And the actors, you know, I don't know them, but they don't come to mind as actors that have done a lot since this film. I could be mistaken.
Yeah, I don't think they went on to do like have illustrious careers.
Yeah.
Like you said, Leon's played by Doris Bannock was in a Madonna music video, wasn't it? Like a Prayer. That was brilliant. It was a great music video. Played a black Jesus, which was awesome.
Yeah.
And especially for its time. I think that was and she's always been good at provocation. And I think she definitely challenged the masses. Say, I remember that video. It was really vivid. I was quite young when it came out.
Yeah, it's a good video.
It's excellent.
They must have saved quite a lot on the budget if they didn't get their first choices, though, right? Because even back in the early 90s, Denzel, Eddie Murphy and Wesley Snipes were still very big names.
Hmm.
Being interested to see why they turned it down. Do you think they might have thought it would have damaged their reputation? Or,
oh yeah,
yeah.
When you're in your height of your career, like what was this? 1993.
93. Yeah.
Yeah. So, what's it? A year later, Denzel was doing Philadelphia. Won himself a Best Supporting Actor.
Yeah.
Like you can't do them films in the same 2 years.
Yeah.
At that young point in his career where he's looking to get to the apex of his career, you can't go and do a really low budget comedy, you know. And I think it was money based, a lot of it. They said no because there weren't enough money.
Yeah.
I heard that Tupac auditioned for this film.
Really?
Yeah, Tupac Shakur.
Do you know as for what character?
Or? No idea.
No.
I just know that he'd auditioned. It was one of the fun trivial ones that I was reading about. Yeah, Tupac Shakur.
That had been interesting as well.
But how can you critique cream of tomato soup?
Well, it's good, isn't it?
It's comforting, it's cheap, it's warm, comes in a tin, and it's just like, that's what you bought on purpose. But, and for me, Cool Runnings is cream of tomato soup.
But if you go to a Michelin-style restaurant and have tomato soup, it's probably much more delicious and nutritious.
Yes, fresh basil from the gardens of Babylon.
Yes, sounds lovely. At the time, it was the highest-grossing live-action film released under the Walt Disney Pictures banner. It's quite an accolade, isn't it?
I suppose so.
Yeah.
They're quite evil, though, Disney, aren't they?
Go on.
I heard they said that the guys were too Jamaican and that they wanted them to sound like the crab from SpongeBob or something. Like,
do you mean Little Mermaid?
Yeah, Little Mermaid, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's his name?
Sebastian.
Sebastian, yeah. They said they wanted... Disney went, they need to sound like Sebastian from Little Mermaid.
Really?
Yeah.
That's...
Apparently Turtle Tall pushed back on that request.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
But it's damaging that the studio wanted that.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it speaks volumes that they're trying to get A-list African-American actors to play Jamaican roles.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know if the actors are Jamaican?
Raul De Lewis is of Trinidad, from what I read. And Malik Yoba's American. Old Yul Brynner. That's hilarious, by the way, because Yul Brynner was a famous Russian-American actor who was bald. And he was in The King and I. He played it 4,600 times.
Really?
Bald head, it's great.
Final fact, contrary to the story in the movie, the Jamaican team was met with open arms by the international bobsledding teams. One of the other teams even went so far as to lend the Jamaicans a backup sled so they could qualify. Now, that's a nice fact, but it wouldn't have made much of a film, would it?
Oh, is that the true story?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool, man.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the film, they are met with grumbled voices and disdain, and they basically don't want Jamaicans taking part in the bobsledding sport because they feel it makes a mockery of a sport they hold dear. But it's nice to hear that in reality they were more than welcoming and supported them.
I think the film had to be a little bit loose on the facts, because at the end of the day it is a feel-good film, and it's serving a purpose. Like, they've got like essentially a Nazi bad guy in it who's German. It's like, yeah, Jamaicans, yeah,
yeah.
And it's just like, well, it's Die Hard.
It's so one-dimensional, isn't it?
Yeah,
but like you said, Cool Runnings is a tin of warming soup. It's a cozy cuddle of a film. It's lovely. It's warming. It's all those things. It being a family film, there has to have that mild peril in there. So it couldn't have been a film and they turned up to the bobsledding event and everyone was like, oh, cool, come in. Like, brilliant. It's amazing that you're here. Wouldn't have made much for a film. It had to have some sort of threat and some sort of peril.
Well, in real life, they were in 25th position before they had the crash. So they were never in the running to win.
Yeah, but again, that wouldn't have made much of a story, would it?
Well, no, because you'd be that Olympian crowd would have only been supportive, because it's not so much, oh, you don't deserve to be here. It's that's a flag we have never seen here.
Yeah.
And how amazing. Because the more flags, the more exposure, the more the world are going to invest into the Olympics. So I think whether they were 25th or second, it's a cool story. And the footage in the film is real.
Is it?
It was, so you know the footage when they crash? That's the real crash.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, just edited a bit, but that's the real crash. Yeah?
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. What did you like about the film?
I love the actual camera work for the actual action sequences of the sledding. They're really impressive. They hold up. All the headshots and inside the car itself, and then obviously mixed with real footage, it doesn't look hokey at all. There's no CGI, there's none. It just looks really good. And then when that's like ice is like bursting past their heads and they're moving, I just get a rush for them. I'm like, oh, I'm excited for them. Excellent.
Yeah.
It's really cool, actually, because Nelson Chris Stokes, who I think is the real guy, Dereese Bannock's character, he said he didn't really remember much from the crash, just that he knew that they'd fallen. And he said he only realised that they were on their side when he could smell his helmet burning.
Jesus.
And he says that sticks with you for a long time.
Yeah, because
it was
made
of fiberglass.
Yeah.
And it was burning as they were hitting the corners. And I was like, whoa. Because if no helmet, he becomes Lighthouse Man.
Yeah.
Just a big hole in the middle of his head.
Oh, Jesus. That's a horrible thought, isn't it?
Yeah, I love the action sequence, if you could call it that, of the actual sledding.
Yeah.
It's really cool. And the way they mixed it with real footage, I thought, looked seamless. It didn't look...
Yeah.
Didn't look over edited. I thought it looked really good.
No, I'll give you that. In such a light-hearted, feel-good film that is an underdog story, where you know we all root for the underdog, don't we? We all want the ones you don't expect to win. We all want the best for them.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they blend that into that feel good vibe of the film. Yeah, that scene when they're speeding down, it did look cool. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. Any more likes about the film?
Yeah, man. Something definitely has to be said for the likes of these films, like Uncle Buck, Cool Runnings, Mighty Duck, Homeward Bound. Obviously, these are not Oscar-winning films. They're not highly critiqued. But, you know, these damn films taught me a lot about kindness, morality. They made me want to see the underdog win. So I think there is a place for them.
Oh, of course, and yeah.
The only problem is it's not the 90s anymore. And it shows. And if you know, as the older you get and you want to go back and enjoy these old treasures, but I think time has whittled them to a point where you're sort of in on the joke now. You're a bit like, oh,
yeah,
it's very cheesy.
Through your own experience and personal evolution, the film is dated. As like you say, all those wonderful films you hold so dear as a child, you watch them with adult eyes and you can't help but to see it with that experience and with the absorption of much better made, more substance-filled movies of recent years. Mm. But I think films like this and the other ones that you mentioned, Mighty Ducks, all of those, I think they get a new lease of life if you watch them with a kid, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
Your children.
Yeah.
You get you see them watching and experiencing those films the first time. It must give you a buzz to watch it with them and seeing them love it.
Yeah, at least you can follow it. You know, it's not just some mad gorb on telly just constantly, but kids programs. So if they're like, oh, let's watch this looks good.
Mm.
Who's Goldberg? I'm like, oh, he's the fattest, almost awesome ice keeper ever.
Yeah.
I like Goldberg. Yeah, it's full of nostalgia.
Yeah, man.
And yeah, God, I remember being young and welling up at that end of Cool Runnings.
Really?
I watched it last night. I didn't have one tear.
No.
That's just growth, I suppose.
But yeah.
Yeah, it's just sad, man, that some films struggle to stay above water, no longer in the 90s.
Yeah.
I think that's one of its shortcomings, really.
And it's not the film's fault, is it?
It's
just with age, with experience, it's not the impact's not as hefty as when you watched it when you was 8 or 10.
Yeah.
Just one of those things, isn't it? It's life.
It tends to be as well, if you notice in films like this, it tends to be really weak sort of support actors.
Mm.
Like the one in this film, when John Candy's petitioning to get the Jamaican team into bobsledding, and he finds a mate, an old mate of his, and asks him for a sled, if he could help him out. The acting with that guy, it was like, it was so bad.
Yeah.
He was like, what are you doing here? Okay, I see you later. I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Didn't match it. And the jokes can be a bit cheap. I heard as well that the actors who play the entire bobsled team all said no to a joke that had been written into the scripts because they thought it was really lazy. And when I read what joke it was, I was like, that is so shit and predictable. Again, Disney amazed me. It was all four of them build a snowman and at the end put a spliff in his mouth.
Jesus.
Yeah.
That's just, it's the epitome of laziness, isn't it?
That's just lazy.
Four Jamaican dudes going to put a spliff in a snowman.
Yeah.
And there's no reference of them smoking weed or anything in the film, but just that little bit, just thought, let's have some,
Then that's 90s for you.
Yeah.
Because that was a time when it was, the stereotypes were just, they were out there, so open, so obvious, and they'd come from all the big corps.
Yeah.
And they'd just use it all the time, it wouldn't matter.
Yeah.
It was at the time they felt there was no consequence and they just felt it was harmful, harmless fun.
Yeah.
But when you think of how lazy that joke is,
yeah,
that's just shit, isn't it?
I'm glad it didn't end up in there because that would lessen it. As a kid, you probably wouldn't pick up on it. And at the time, if you're an adult watching it, you might have thought it was funny or tricked into thinking it was funny. But as we've developed as a society, it's a stereotype that's not really needed in a kid's film, is it?
It's not really funny either.
No, it's not.
It's
no.
Not. And I love Dougie Doug, Sanka.
Yeah.
I think he's a great character. He's your chunk of your Goonies, isn't he? He's a great side character. Well, he's one of the main parts, I suppose. But he his lines cracks me up. Adam, you're my best friend. We've been through a whole heap together and I really, really need you.
Yeah.
Ask me to help. Help. Go on. Ask me.
Help me.
No. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
I love how he did that. He just doesn't want to help his mate. It's like, no!
Yeah, he grinds him down, doesn't he? Yeah, I think Sanka's probably my favourite character of the whole film.
Yeah, he's great.
I think my favourite thing about it, you touched on it already, is just the nostalgia element of it. Within seconds of Cool Running starting, I was transported to watching and loving this film when I was a child. It brings back memories of a simpler time with a clearer mind. Whenever I hear Cool Runnings or think of Cool Runnings, it transports me back to a time where I was off of school sick around Christmas. And it was at a time where you couldn't record TV. There was no such thing as catch up. There was no streaming services or anything like that. And at Christmas time, during the days, it would be chock block full of movies. Yeah. But you'd miss most of them because you're at fucking school. Because I was off, I had to look at the Christmas Radio Times and I saw Cool Runnings was on. And I was like, brilliant, I'll sit there. I sat in bed. I wasn't very well. Mum made me a hot chocolate. I sat there and watched it. And I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
You watched it in winter with a hot chocolate. That's amazing.
Yeah. And whatever my adult brain and eyes take from this film 25 years down the line when I first saw it, nothing can take that away. That taken back to a time and place where I found real comfort and genuine enjoyment of the film. And I think that's lovely. I think there'd be loads of people of our sort of age group that have really warm sentiments towards this film as well. And because of that, I don't think you can say films like Cool Runnings, you can't consider them a bad film. Like you say, they speak to a time where it was easier to enjoy things, I guess.
They've got their own category, haven't they?
Yeah.
You have to be an idiot to think it's a film that's going to be lauded, or it's going to be an Oscar contender, or it's going to be in 1001 Movies Before You Die. It might be in there. I highly doubt it, only because they're almost films now that studios turn their backs on, almost want to get rid of their past. And they're almost like, we need to forget about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because no one knows now when something's going to pop up in their film and be very, like, controversial.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, something becomes controversial. Yeah, there's a place for it, like you said, a nostalgia category.
Exactly, yeah. And I don't think it's fair to critique a film the same way you would critique a film that's been released in the last 10 years or something like that, a serious film that's got more adult themes and stuff like this. This film deserves to stay in its separate library of nostalgic enjoyment. It deserves to stay there and I guess be left untouched.
Yeah.
And I don't consider there being any major problems with the story and the racial stereotypes or anything in the film. Nothing like screams like, oh God, that's so awful. Like, I can't believe that. What you said about that spliff gag could have lessened it, but thankfully that wasn't in it. I also just love how it's your classic underdog story, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a wholesome family fun that makes you root for the underdog. It's warm, cozy cinema that can be enjoyed by people of all ages.
Mm-hmm.
And despite my more cynical adult mind finding flaws in it, which is inevitable if you're doing a podcast and critiquing a film, despite all of that, you can't take that away. Like, it's lovely. It's a feel good, well-intentioned story. And yeah, I love that about it.
Do you know it's got a companion piece film?
What?
An unintended one.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
Also set in the 1988 Calgary Winter Olympics. Same guy was competing as the Jamaicans. Eddie Eagle. Eddie Eagle contended in the exact same tournament.
Really? And I didn't know it was the same Olympics.
Yeah, and in the film, Eddie Eagle, you can hear a commentator talking about, and now the Jamaican bobsled team are setting up on the hill.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's a little link.
Yeah, that's nice.
Completely different film.
Yeah.
But both comedies.
Both underdogs.
Both underdogs and both underachievers in the Olympics, but from their country's point of view, overachievers.
Yeah.
Because they got there.
And it strikes a chord with general audiences that, like we say, rooting for the underdogs. It's that warm, that hopeful story of underachiever, overachieving sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, my final favourite thing about it is the same as yours and just Sanka. He cracked me up as a kid and is still my favourite character decades later.
He's still great.
Yeah, funny and loud, yet charming and well-intentioned. I still have fun watching Sanka on screen. And yeah, I think that's it's testament to Dougie Doug and his charisma and personality and charm that even decades later, I still loved watching him.
I love Dougie Doug.
The acting and the shooting techniques and the script, the dialogue, all of that, yes, it feels dated, but Sanka is timeless. He's just great. Just a bundle of energy that is really fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was brilliant in that. Is there anything you didn't like about the film?
I thought it was... As much as it is kind of funny, because it wasn't done to full effect, I think that sort of, they're not racist, are they, in it, the whites? But there's an undertone of it's not just because you're not that good at bobsledding. It almost feels like a lot of the association, or I think they're called that entire white board of like professional.
Yeah.
It's like saying no to, an all black bobsled team. And the German guy, it's just like,
you don't can't imagine to dig too deep to see that there's some racial stereotyping and profiling going on there.
Yeah.
I mean, thankfully, it's not blatant in your face like racism. It's not jokes at the Jamaicans' expense for their racial differences. It's not obvious, but there is certainly an undertone there.
Yeah,
it's a bit uneasy, isn't it?
Some of the white characters in it are just like the uninhibited racist guy. It just feels like it, and I'm like, you didn't need it, because I can't imagine anyone had that thought or feeling towards them. I think it would be more an awe thing, like that is a Jamaican bobsleigh team, there's not even snow in their country. Yeah, but I don't know, you just feel like they're being persecuted in it, and I feel like that distracts maybe a little from the well-intentioned themes, I suppose, of the film. I didn't really. And that's watching it now.
Yes, I don't think you'd pick up on that as an innocent child.
No.
But as you say, when you watch it back.
The Swiss guy looks like, Jamaicans with the blue eyes. And he's literally dressed like an off-duty Nazi.
Yeah.
And it's funny, man. I mean, Beer Fest almost.
Yeah.
Them scenes are like Beer Fest. Like, and they, I don't know, I think they don't fit anymore in that film.
I think thankfully those characters in it, they're laughable. So any sort of discrepancies they have against the Jamaican bobsled team, you're sort of laughing at them rather than feeling like uncomfortable at what they're saying. You're like, oh, what an idiot for saying that. You're not sitting there thinking, oh God, this film's actually really like racist. It's actually trying to put forward its own racial prejudices into a kid's film. Like, oh, that's awful. It's not as, there's no sort of darkness or sincere motive there. But if you look at them now, it's hard to sort of ignore, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because there's no way, like, Olympians would ever have put their nose down at Jamaican athletes. They know their prowess. You go all the way back to the Nazi Olympics. Is it Jesse Owens? I can't remember his name, but he has his hand up, and he, in a Nazi stadium, he's just kicked the arse out of the Aryan race. And how symbolic that is.
Yeah.
There's no way, like, them turning up with a bobsled and every white team on earth stop and look and it all goes quiet.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, come on.
It's almost pantomime, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else you didn't like about the film?
It's so hard to talk nostalgia, because nostalgia is like confidence in a product that no longer works. Oxycontin, turkey Twizzlers.
Oh, I love turkey Twizzlers, man.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's weird because you feel like you're betraying yourself. Like,
that's a great point. Yeah.
A film that I've always loved, Willow, always loved it. But as I'm getting older, I'm finding it harder to watch it. And it holds a place dear in my heart. Like, I love Willow. I think it's excellent. But I'm scared to keep watching them now because I'm worried it's going to change my thought on them, an opinion. I'd rather just leave that one in the past and just go, I love Willow. I don't want to change my mind, which is weird because you're sort of denying yourself growth, I suppose. But then it's like the nostalgia part of me, I'm feeling anger towards big movie studios that keep going back and shitting on prized possessions, you know. Like that whole South Park member berries thing is one of the most cleverest things I've ever seen because it's so true.
It is, yeah.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember. J.J. Abrams just keep banging out fucking rehashing old gold and turning it into shit. Tin,
yeah,
just annoying.
I think there's an element of kindness in realizing that the film you loved as a child, you're not going to appreciate the same way when you're an adult. And I think it's as I say, a kindness to sort of leave it in that library of pre-loved films and just always hold it dear and don't damage its reputation or its legacy by revisiting it.
Mm.
But equally, it is interesting to go back and watch films that you adored when you were younger just to see if they do hold up, because those films are still out there. There's still films that were 80s or 90s films. I mean, Toy Story, the first one, still holds up, and that came out in 1999.
Animation's very different.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, of course it is, yeah. I think it's striking that balance and knowing that some films are timeless, but it tends to be more adult-themed films are more timeless than films you would love as a kid. I think they don't age well because we have aged since watching it.
Your taste changed.
It is a shame though, isn't it? Because I haven't seen this film since I was really, really young. Mm. And I was excited to revisit it because I had, like Member Berries, I remember it being so amazing. Yeah. So I sat down to watch it and I was like, and it started and I was transported back to that time. And I was like, yes, I'm so happy. Sat there with a coffee, watched it. And it doesn't hit the same, does it?
You've gone and seen better things. And across all categories, it doesn't matter if it's a sci-fi or anything. It's like, say you love going to Butlins every year. You grow up, you go to Butlins every single year. And then your uncle takes you to New York for the first ever time. And you see New York.
Your horizons are broadened. You've experienced bigger, better things. It doesn't compare.
And then you drive back to Butlins. Yeah. And you're like, I remember sitting over there. There's an element of depression to it.
It is, yeah. Because you're
weird.
Your memory's tainted.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is quite sad, isn't it?
Man, how many films have I got to go through with this?
Yeah. Maybe we'll leave the Member Berry films alone and just let them live in their own world of joy and happiness.
Yeah.
Any more dislikes about Cool Runnings?
Yeah. No, not really. Just I'm aware of its shortcomings.
Yeah.
Essentially, I'm aware of them, and I could never give it fire and heat.
No,
like I would to some like Leo Carax films.
Yeah,
no, I'll leave it at that. Ad.
Yeah,
let me leave it at that.
Yeah, despite how it's aged and how we've aged, it's still a warm family film, isn't it? It would be awful of us to sit here and go in so hard and slate a film like Cool Runnings. It would be uncouth. Mm. Like there's just no need for it. But there's a few things that I didn't like about the film, and again, this is only because of my adult experience watching it. And top of the list is the script. I sound like a cretin bad-mouthing such a family classic, but the script and the dialogue was chock full of cliches and soundbites that really aged the film. Mm. Some scenes felt laboured as a result of very simple, very generic writing. Now, the target audience when this came out was me at that age, mm-hmm. 8 to 10-year-old kid watching this film. I obviously wouldn't have picked that up at the time. I wasn't sitting there as a kid stuffing my face with donuts and Coca-Cola and be like, the script's awful. Oh, this writing's terrible. Of course I wouldn't. But as an older person watching it, it's hard to look past. It is. And that does, like you say, it's oddly depressing to watch a film and then be like, oh man.
Yeah, it's weird.
This used to be my bread and butter. This spoke of Christmas. This spoke of just having fun, like pissing myself laughing at the exploits of the Jamaican bobsleigh team and their journey.
Well, if you were married or engaged or with your partner, you wouldn't go and knock on an ex-girlfriend's door and go, can I come in for a bit and just have a chat?
Yeah.
You know, just...
Do you remember when we used to like each other?
Yeah, kiss me. Yeah. Just kiss my neck for a second.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It would never feel right.
No, it's so true.
It's returning to old love.
Exactly. And again, going through my dislikes, I do feel a bit dirty and uneasy in my own skin because it feels so harsh. It's like I'm like hitting child me with a newspaper and being like, no, you shouldn't like that. Like, what are you doing? But it's a different time.
Hmm.
I was a different person. Another dislike I had was it's just a paint-by-numbers 90s film. And again, it feels almost sacrilege to say it, but my adult eyes can't help but see this as a pretty bland, feel-good family film that lacks any real... substance. But it just does. And yes, it's emotional to say that.
Quentin Tarantino said it's a subtext for the moon landings.
Really?
No.
I was questioning that and I was like, I could see him saying something like that. I'm glad we cleared that up. Final dislike, we've mentioned it quite frequently already, but it's the grown-up cynicism. I love this film as an impressionable youth. Watching this as an adult ruined my memory of Cool Runnings. And I was excited to watch this one after so many years, but wished I'd left it in my locker of long-lost films that I loved as a kid. And quite simply, it's just not as good as I remembered it to be.
So do you think if we ever come to do a Member Berry-type film again, we don't watch it, we review it based on our memory of it?
That's a good idea.
See how contrasting it is.
Because I think if we did this episode without rewatching it, I don't think I could think of a dislike.
No.
Based on memory. And it's always, I would watch that film any time it was on TV when I was younger, in a time where the TV channels would regurgitate the same 10, 20 films because that's all they had the licensing for.
Mm-hmm.
It was normally on most Christmases and then scattered out throughout the year. And I'd watch it a few times and loved it. So if we started this episode and be like, what do you remember of Cool Runnings? It would only be good things.
Yeah.
It would only be the disjointed memories I had of a simpler time.
But see, there's some films where I never get that, where I know I could sit down tonight and watch Jaws or The Thing and not have that feeling that I have towards, say, Cool Runnings in terms of it's lessened. For me, they're mentally classic in my head.
Yeah.
So for me, The Thing will never age. I feel it's perfect for me.
Yeah.
And Jaws still holds up for me in terms of fear of shark. I've always said it. You know, there's still not to this day a film where a shark looks better.
No.
I've still not seen one. They're two films specifically that I have real confidence in still today. And I have watched them both within the last three, 4 years.
Yeah.
And still enjoyed them. But yeah, Cool Runnings, because it's a 90s comedy, as you said, and it's Disney.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're a crowd pleaser.
Of course.
Your great anecdote always, they're McDonald's.
Yeah.
You know, when you want fast, in the mouth, can I smell it? Yes, I can.
Yeah.
And then out the other scat end.
Yeah.
It's Disney.
Yeah. And films like The Thing and Jaws, I think, tend to be able to be timeless, because even though they're, what, 30, 40 years old now, yeah, something like 70s. That, it's still adult themes. Yeah. So it's not trying to, it's not a family film. So you watch it when you first saw it, when you was probably too young to watch them.
Yeah.
And then watch them as an adult. There's still adult themes there. The Thing still, I only saw The Thing for the first time probably within the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And I was amazed by the special effects, the mm-hmm. the unsettling tone of it, just great how plot. It feels. Yeah, great plot, great, like, who do I trust? All of that is still held up. But with Cool Runnings, because its target audience is families, it's got to appeal to the young people as well as the older people. Mm-hmm. Don't think that ages as well, because the subject matters, just it's lighter, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's feel good. It's there's no substance to it.
Mm. Little rascals.
Yeah, I couldn't watch. After watching Cool Runnings, I don't think I'll touch those films.
Don't.
Like when I was about, I'd say 11 or 12, I watched Demolition Man for the first time.
Mm.
And I watched it and I was like, this is the greatest film that has ever been made.
I remember loving Demolition Man.
And I remember staying up and watching it with my dad on a Friday evening. And I went to bed and I was buzzing. I was like, oh my God, I've just watched that film. Is mad. It came on Amazon Prime a couple of years ago and I saw it was on there. And to my fiance, I was like, oh, we have to watch this. Demolition Man used to be my favorite. It's an absolute classic.
Mm.
Within 5 minutes of it, I was like, what the fuck is even this? It's like, how it's Sylvester Stallone just being an absolute menace. Wesley Snipes, his character, Simon Phoenix, is still cool in it.
Yeah.
But different to The Thing and Jaws, but similar to Cool Runnings. It just doesn't time. It just doesn't age well.
Mm.
And I held it in such high regard because I watched it younger than I should have. Watching it now, it's hot trash. It really is, and it's sad.
Yeah,
yeah, Cool.
My one is Highlander.
Yeah,
growing up, like Highlander was. You'd put them with Braveheart, and you'd think same film. Like you'd think both excellent, both set in Scotland, swordplay, amazing music. Growing up, you realise how far apart them films are. And Braveheart's aged as well. In areas, it definitely has. You know, but Highlander, man, I used to regard that film so, like, this film's amazing. I still have it's still excellent. Obviously, it's Queen soundtrack throughout, so that helps. But God, watch it. Don't watch it.
No, I'm so reluctant. I knew there was a reluctance there after Demolition Man, but I thought, you know what? Cool Runnings is Cool Runnings. It's timeless. It's feel good. And while that, I still feel that about Cool Runnings. Part of me wish I didn't watch it, man. Part of me wished that I just left it and just held it in such high regard as I did when I was younger. Yeah. I've got some questions. Do you think a film that you hold dear nostalgically can be ruined by watching it when you're older? I think that's asked and answered, yes. Really. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Not all cases. But when it does happen, it happens hard.
Yeah.
And it hits hard.
It does hit hard, doesn't it? Yeah. Mm. I just, before we get onto the ratings, I say if you'd asked me when I watched this first time, I wouldn't have hesitated and I'd been like, this is a 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
And watching it dramatically decrease, it's so weird. Sad. But then on the flip side, it does make me value those films that are really timeless, like 12 Angry Men springs to mind. And yeah. I know that's not necessarily a family film. There's real depth to the story, really important adult subject matter.
Well, single setting, isn't it? So
yeah,
it can stand the test of the time because it is a tour de force of acting and story, yes, more so.
Exactly that, yeah. I think a film can stand the test of time if the story is a solid story, and it doesn't matter if you watch it in the 50s, 60s, mm-hmm. 70s, and so on and so forth. Problem with Cool Runnings is it aimed at a target audience that we've outgrown.
Yeah, well, it's a very colourful film. It was shot on location in Calgary and Jamaica, and, you know, I admire that. I admire that they actually shot it at the destinations where it was intended to be. But, yeah, it's definitely lost its edge.
So,
it's ski edge.
Oh,
it's
hello.
Bobsledge.
Yeah, I like that one. With remakes, reboots, prequels and sequels plaguing the cinematic landscape, are you surprised that Cool Runnings has remained untouched by the Hollywood regurgitation machine?
Yes.
I do think that it's a matter of time before they'll do something similar. Or it'll be a Disney Plus series, or it'll be a complete reboot.
Mm.
And I can just see it happening, and surprised it hasn't already.
I don't think they'll retouch it ever.
No?
Well, no, because how can you retell a story where they didn't win and they were actually 25th, 26th place? There's no glory there.
See, I could see it reaching a new generation of people, because the story at its core is people going against the norm, people pushing their boundaries and trying to compete in something that's completely alien and giving it a go. And I think that message is an important message to young minds. I do.
Mm.
Granted, there's loads of just stories.
Millions of new stories.
Yeah, exactly. So, but the way Hollywood is now, everything's getting a reboot.
Do you know what I'd do with it? I wouldn't reboot it. I would make it black and white. I'd make it a silent movie, and I'd slow it down to 0.98 seconds and put a little grit on it. And then it would look and feel incredible and like a new film. Imagine seeing it silent in black and white, and it's almost like it's an incredible story of...
So like an art house Cool Runnings?
Yeah.
I mean, I'd watch it.
Slow it down a little.
Kids
silent movie.
Like that,
the only thing I'd be annoyed about is, no, it would crack me up actually, John Candy's line, remember, you don't break your bones in a bobsled. No, they shatter.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned John Candy. Do you still hold him in as high regard as you did when you was younger? Because I don't know about you. I used to think John Candy was amazing.
Yeah.
Spaceballs, Cool Runnings.
Uncle Buck, fun film.
I watched it, and like everything else about the film, he was not nearly as good as I remembered him to be. And I know that's probably a controversial take, because the man has got such a big reputation. Like he spoke of that time. He's
the
iconic.
Films though, isn't it?
Yeah. But I watched him and I was like, I always thought he was a really talented actor. And I'm not disputing. He's talented, but I thought he was really the sort of the holding force of the film. I thought he was brilliant. I remember him being amazing, and I watched it. And I was like, don't actually do that much. He's not actually as good as I remembered him to be.
He plays a really good cameo in JFK, the Oliver Stone film, where he's like this sweaty lawyer. To have seen him do more serious films like John Goodman,
yeah,
he developed into a better actor the more and more he did, didn't he? So he started off obviously in lesser roles, but then you get him. John Goodman now is prized. I think he's excellent now. But maybe if Candy would have lived longer, he might have done a bit more.
Mm.
But he's a bit like a Farley, isn't he?
Yeah, taken too early, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Final question. In a bizarre turn of events, you find yourself as the driver of an actor-filled bobsled racing for charity. What three movie stars would join you in your team and why?
Kiefer Stanfield, because I love him. Ryan Gosling,
because
always.
In any question I ask, that man's going to pop up.
Yeah.
Isn't he? Yeah.
And can I have Ricky Face?
He'd slow you down, wouldn't he?
No, he needs a bit of weight at the front.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So you're going Ricky Gervais, Lakeith Stanfield and Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
What an eclectic bobsled that is. That'd be interesting.
Gervais, though, he'd keep it light.
Yeah.
You know, the concentration of Lakeith Stanfield and his perfection when it comes to his craft, I want that. And I just need a bit of eye candy if it's all going to go wrong. And there'd be Ryan Gosling right there.
Would you want Ryan in front of or behind you in the sled?
I'm bigger than him, but I'd like to small spoon in that scenario.
You'd like his soothing breath on your neck?
Yeah, because I know that's minty fresh.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Mm.
Definitely. See, when I thought of the question, I would just want it to be a fun bobsled. So I'd have Andy Samberg in there, because he just
hot rod
cracks me up. Will Ferrell in there. I know he's so tall.
One more curly haired fuck, please. John C. Wright.
Danny McBride completes my bobsled. We would crash immediately.
They've all got curly perms.
Yep.
Well, Sandberg, not so much, but you can have it if you see in Hot Rod.
Yeah, oh. I think I would go comedic in my bobsled. We wouldn't win, but I'd have a great time in there. What would you rate Cool Runnings out of 10?
I'm going to give it a nostalgic 7.
Okay.
That's an Oscar 1, but it's a nostalgic 7.
Yeah, yeah. I think you have to let nostalgia in a little bit when rating this film, because if this was the first time you'd ever seen it and rated it based on that, it would be I think it'd be a completely different score because of how it has aged, how the writing's a bit weak, some of the jokes don't land, the acting's a bit off. And I rated it slightly lesser than you. I went a 6, and I was torn between a 6 and a 7. I think if I'd let nostalgia all the way in and steer my bobsled, I would have gone the 7, but I was a bit more more trying to be fair to the podcast as a whole. And I thought, you know what, nostalgia aside, still a 6, because it's still nice, isn't it? It's a nice, warm cuddle of a film.
Yeah.
And it certainly, if I ever have kids, it would be one that I'd show them at a young age to sort of, you know, have a shared bonding experience of watching a film that I used to love and hopefully they would love as well. So I think that's a fair score. That gives Cool Runnings a total score of 13 out of 20, which is what you'd expect for a film that's 30 years old, I'd say, yeah.
We all age.
We do. It's the sad reality of life, yeah. If you like your films to be fun, family-friendly and well-intentioned, or if you want to burn your innocent childhood memory of a movie that you used to love, then Cool Runnings could be a film for you. Consider watching this one if you enjoyed Mean Machine, 42 and Eddie the Eagle. Should we play a game?
Si, senor.
The game in question is What the Plot, where the rules are simple and the results quite the opposite. Harry will conceive an original idea from his big and beautiful brain and give birth to a plot. It is then down to me to nurture this thought by providing a film title, genre, cast, and anything else I can think of to raise this brainchild into a fully functioning film concept. Over to you, Harry.
Okay, we live in a in England where military service is compulsory, whether you're male, female, between the ages of 16 and 50. Now, you have a woman who, by today's standards, everyone would say is a supermodel, stunning, very beautiful. Everything about her is perfect. And she gets called up for military service, which she takes on wholeheartedly. She goes to do a tour in, say, Iraq, Afghanistan. Let's say that one of them wars is still continuing. Anyway, she treads on an IED and loses both her legs. She's now lost her legs, this beautiful supermodel, and she's sent home back to England. And it follows the story about how can she get back onto that bandwagon of where she was prior to the war, prior to losing her legs. And, you know, dating's different. Men look at her differently. She's almost become this... an object of fetish rather than this wonderful, beautiful woman. Look at her. And it's about her struggle dealing with, you know, being maimed from a war, and how does she now become a new person, new identity, because she's no longer this superstar model who got all the attention. She's now a war veteran with no legs. And it's a struggle to do with not only what happened to her, but she's got to also change her identity from prior to the war and the service, the time she spent in the war.
Okay.
Hit me hard and hit me quick with some pudding.
I haven't got a lot at the moment. So when's this set? Is it now?
Could be now, because the only thing missing is compulsory military service. But some countries have that. Like in Israel, for instance, men and women do a compulsory 2-3 years of military service. So just apply that to England, and males and females both have to do military service. I think Finland still does it as well. Russia is immobilizing. So, yeah, it's equality across the board.
Okay, so this story speaks of in a time where everyone's called to war.
In a time.
Yeah. That this woman who's very attractive, very beautiful, smart, doesn't have any problem at being called to service.
No, because it's built into their culture. It's a duty.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the meat of the story is her coming to terms with the
injury. Well, she's lost it. Yeah, she's lost her legs. Yeah. The woman she left behind in England, she can no longer model. She can no longer get have photo shoots. You know, that's something, because it's just not built into the society. Look, we're accepting of everyone. Mm. So she's lost her identity. Yeah. Is it a good or a bad thing? Has it made her a better person? We have to see what type of a director.
Yeah. I'm struggling here. So can you just keep talking while I try and figure it out?
Well, imagine the shock of going through that. It'd be like being Jimmy Page or Jimi Hendrix, and you know, you lost your hands halfway through your career. You're no longer Jimi Hendrix, are you? Your associate, your name is Jimi Hendrix because you are the God-given guitarist handed down to us by angels of the Valhalla of God of the guitar tell to Tutuma. So, if she loses her legs, I mean, you think the catwalks, you think the attention she'd get in bars. And let's be brutally honest here. Out of all of the men, let's say there's 50 dudes in a bar, 50 women, and this model, who's still beautiful, you know, wheels into a bar or gets help into a bar because she's lost her legs. You know, how many guys are actually genuinely going to want to get to know her? Apart from, you know, the freaky ones who are into some fetish stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and then maybe she needs to cleanse herself of that past human being that she once was. I suppose you could liken it to Sound of Metal, Riz Ahmed. Doesn't he go deaf in it?
He does, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a very interesting concept. And I think the story looking at how war doesn't prejudice in a time where everyone is expected to bear arms and go to war. It doesn't matter if you're a stunning woman mm-hmm. or a very unfortunate looking man in conflict, you're called up to whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think that speaks to really undiluted equality, because if everyone has to go to war, it doesn't matter your background, doesn't matter who you are. And the story evolving and her having to deal with the plight of war and losing her limbs and then having to navigate the world with, she still has her looks, she still mm-hmm. has her sharp wit, but she's obviously gone through a lot of trauma, I think makes for a fascinating story. So to recap, it's set in England where there's compulsory military service. As a supermodel type woman called up for service like everyone else of between a certain age, right? Mm-hmm. She's called up to service in the Middle East. During war, her legs are blown off and she has to deal with life after the fact mm-hmm. and she becomes a sort of a objectified for different reasons. She may be always being objectified under the male gaze because of how stunning she is, but now there's people objectifying her because of their particular niche fetish.
Yeah, I don't think that would be like a lot of men, but no. They're definitely, you know, there'd definitely be the odd lout that would approach her
exactly
and only want one thing.
And unfortunately, a beautiful woman is going to get unwanted attention regardless of their background or social standing. Then I don't think that would necessarily change with the loss of limbs. So it's her learning to navigate that world would be an interesting story. I see a director of the film, considering it's from a female perspective, I think the director should have a female perspective too. And I'd have Chloe Zhao, who directed Nomadland.
Oh, nice.
And she did The Eternals as well, which was quite a different offering into the MCU.
So that's a Marvel one, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Eternals. And she's quite good displaying drama that's more personable. So in Nomadland, Frances McDormand plays someone that's lost her husband, lost her home, so she takes on the life as a nomad, which mm-hmm. it could have been over dramatized to ridiculous levels. It mm-hmm. could have been almost like a comedy or ridiculous,
it's quite subtle.
It's really subtle, yeah, and grounded. So I think realistic. In this story, she would be good bringing a realistic element into it, yeah. Mm-hmm. In the lead role, I'd have Olivia Cooke, who's I think she's really good in House of the Dragon. She's been Ready Player One, she's been in a few things, a really attractive young actor that mm-hmm. I think is gonna go on to bigger and better things. I think she'd be really good in this role.
She in Bates Motel, Olivia Cooke. You're talking about the dark haired girl playing Princess Alicent.
Yes. She okay. was in Sound of Metal, Me and Elle and the Dying Girl, Ready Player One.
I think
she's coming up to be about 30, so she's still in that age bracket. Very beautiful woman, very yeah. talented actor. So I could see her paired with Chloe Zhao doing a really grounded, moving performance.
Yeah.
And the title I struggled with, I'm not going to lie. And I'm not particularly happy with the title I've chosen, but I'm going with Beauty and the Blast. Let me tell you my story. Our country was sent to war. I was happy to serve. We all should have the right to fight. I saw allies, both men and women, my friends, lose their lives. I guess I'm lucky that all I lost was my legs. In a time where I saw lives end, my new one has just begun.
Beauty and the Blast, coming soon.